Just for information, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson will be chairing this hearing, so just hold on for one moment, and the next voice you should hear should be the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson.
Good morning, sir. Could you please state your name and your ADC number for me for the record, please? Mr. Jackson?
He said he couldn't hear well. I mean, he couldn't hear Professor. Maybe just bring him home a little closer.
Mr. Jackson, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, good morning, sir. Could you just state your name, your ADC number for me for the record, please?
Mr. Leroy Jackson, Jr., 35810.
Okay, Mr. Jackson, you attend before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. This is a parole hearing. I want to introduce you to the board members that are going to be conducting your parole hearing this morning, sir. To my far left, far right is Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. Next to her is the Honorable Louis Quinones. In the middle is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is actually our board chair. Sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your panel chair this morning. And to my left is Mr. David, the Honorable David Neal.
It's nice to meet everybody.
Jackson, this is a parole hearing for 31412D, as well as a 411, which means that parole hearing for 34411, absolute discharge, parole to the next consecutive sentence. According to the documentation that I have, sir, you are coming off of a 52-year sentence for rape. It looks like he had 252-year sentence for rape, one expired, legal parole to the next consecutive sentence, and you're serving a second sentence to a 52-year sentence. And if you are paroled to your next consecutive sentence, you will actually go to what I believe I'm looking at is a 14-year sentence for burglary, first-degree services, a lot of charges that were actually in here. Acting by my understanding that if you were released, that you would stay, move into a halfway home and support yourself through your Social Security payments and doing odd jobs, sir. I also see that you have taken some classes. The last class that I see that it looks like you took, sir, you can correct me on this, is a class in 2014 was a smart recreational class. You also took a sexual offenders class in 2008. So is that true? Have you taken any classes since 2014?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So also looking at your angry report, sir, it looks like that you did have a long history in the Ames report. However, it appears that your last incident, according to the Ames report, was in 2014. You were found guilty of a major for fighting on November, looks like 2006, November 22nd, 2006. Was that your last ticket that you actually received, sir?
Yes.
Okay, sir, you are currently in custody for sexual assault. I'm going to just read some information, sir. According to the documentation that I have, you have alleged from the beginning that you were not involved in this incident. Is that still your...
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to read some information coming just from the court documents that we actually have here that's involving this case. It basically says that on December 28, 1977, 70-year-old victim was at her... No, that's true.
Well, Mr. Johnson, why you're doing that so that we all can be on the same page?
I just realized I picked up the wrong file.
Yeah, because he's certified for a 412A, 411 home arrest. That is for general parole, absolute discharge of home arrest.
Yeah, I just picked up the wrong file.
Okay, sir. Yes, sir.
So, sir, excuse me. You didn't even correct me. Sir, you saw I was going through that and it was the wrong thing? Mr. Jackson?
Yes.
Okay, so you're actually serving for a rape. You actually are certified for a 412B. You served a 5-year sentence for aggravated assault, which is expired. Then you went to a 10-year sentence for theft. You're asking, that sentence has since expired. Now you are serving a 100-year sentence for rape. You have actually had the opportunity to appear before this board. So you're looking for a home arrest, regular parole, or absolute discharge, sir.
Yes.
Records, it may state you live with your sister in Mesa, Arizona. Support yourself by getting a job as well as clothes as a tailor.
Yes.
Since you've been incarcerated, sir, you do have a history. Your last ticket that you actually received was August 12, 2014, for threatening. And you were found guilty of that. Could you tell me what that was about, sir?
No, you said I got a ticket for threat, right?
Right, sir. It's August 12, 2014.
And that was a threat, right?
Yes, sir.
When I was in class, and one of the teachers said that I supposed to have made a statement, and he went to the warden and told the warden that I made a statement. It was at the time when this was over in the East Unit. East Unit? Metal. This was over in Metal. I was going to a school over there, and the teacher told the warden that I made a statement about one of the officers there that they got jumped on. Mm-hmm. And he said that he heard me make a statement of it, and I didn't make the statement. It was someone else talking. And we went to the warden's office. The warden just sent me back home. Then I ended up getting, he ended up, the school teacher ended up giving me a ticket for being late. And then I got mad at him for lying on me because I never was late for class. That's what that ticket was behind.
Okay, sir, so I see that you had a parole hearing on November 23rd, 2015 for a 412A absolute discharge parole. That was denied. You had one in June 14th of 2016 that was also denied. And then you had another one in December 15th of 2016 that was also denied. Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir. So looking at this report, did you receive a GED while you were incarcerated, sir?
No, I haven't.
Okay, did you take some GED? Because I see on here there's a last educational thing I see that you had looks like June 18, 2014, where you actually received, it says GED education. So were you studying to get your GED?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so what happened there, sir?
That was the whole, all that was behind when I got kicked out of class.
Uh-huh.
Behind that ticket. So they never let me go back in. And then plus, you know, also I have a problem of reading and writing and spelling.
So I see that.
But I was trying.
Okay, so I see that you took one sex offender class, which was in November of 08, sir. Did you try to take anything else after that?
No, I didn't.
Is there a reason why?
Well, they kept on moving me around from different yards. So, you know, I just gave up.
Okay. Okay, sir, so based on the police department reports, you were charged with one count of rape, one count of aggravated battery, and one count of grand theft. And you were found guilty by a jury in 1976. According to the police report, sir, according to Phoenix Police Department report number February 1st, 1976, at approximately 7:30 a.m., that you have been accused of severely assaulting Lisa, victim at her residence at 4001 East McDowell Road, number 252, Phoenix, Arizona. After severely assaulting the victim with a brass rod, states that you broke the victim entire arms and ankles together with an electrical cord. Then the victim was then covered with their blanket and remained inside this fashion for approximately 30 minutes while you allegedly run through numerous articles inside of a house. The victim says she was sleeping in her bed when she was awakened by Leslie, you standing over her, striking her with a metal object. This is after the acts of sexual assault was committed, that's when you put a table, pulled the table to the side of the bed, attached an electrical cord, tied the victim's ankles together, bent her legs back and tied the ankles and wrists together, sir. So you're saying that that wasn't you, according to the statements and the reports. It says that you stated that you was at your aunt's house sleeping with your wife at the time this incident occurred.
Yes, and that's true.
Okay, so it also says that in the report, in addition to this event, that on November 30th, 1975, there was an alleged rape at a knife point of a victim at a residence. After the rape was committed, numerous items were removed from her apartment. Are you alleging that that wasn't involving you either?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, and this is one more, that on April 24th, 1976, the last attempt rape Ms. Gilmore at her residence. The defendant was not able to complete the act as the victim disobeyed his commands and screamed very loudly, causing the roommate to wake up. Should be noted that in both of these cases that you were positively identified by both of those victims in that case. Those cases, you're aware of that, sir?
It wasn't me.
Okay. So you have several supporters here to speak here on your behalf. Also, as a result of those, you were received the sentence that you actually are currently serving at this time. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
So you want to tell us, sir, or tell this board, because we haven't had an opportunity to talk with you before, sir. So you want to tell us what occurred or what happened during that period of time?
I would love to.
Okay.
Okay, at the time that they said I first had raped anybody, I wasn't nowhere around. One of the victims said, I think it was the one said that the person was a big guy, and he weighed more than I did. And he didn't have no scars or no scars on his body. And I know it wasn't on me because I have a scar on my body. And I never was a big guy. And I've always been trying to find out how my name came up in all this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not no monster. I never have had no reason to rape nobody. And these ladies, I feel sorry for them, but I don't even know who they are. I haven't did anything. And I'm doing this time, and this time is really something that I don't even understand. But I have to do it. But no, I haven't raped nobody. I don't have no need to rape nobody.
Okay, Mr. Jackson. I also want to just kind of inform you that basically we don't have a police report. We're not trying to retry this incident. We only have information that are coming from court records and pre-sentence reports. So we don't have a police report that we would be referring to. And information that was emailed earlier to us looks like. Good luck to you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, sir, so there are several witnesses here that are, I'm going to see who's actually here. You have a, is it Ellie Hutchinson?
Yes.
Okay, Ms. Hutchinson, do you plan on testifying?
Yes.
Okay. With Title Mountain Finance, you also have a Lucinda Heights, it looks like.
Claybon, yes.
Claybon, family brand, you plan on testifying?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you also have Evelyn Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Looks like Rita Walters.
What is that?
Okay. And you have Leroy Ethel Williams? Okay. You also have a, look like Martha Walters?
Yes, it's Marva Walters. I'm also his own.
Okay. You have a Lisa Marlin? Okay.
Lisa's for the victim.
Right, as you see that on here. Michael Williams?
Family friend.
Okay. And Steve Jackson?
Right here.
And Benny Williams?
Denny's the telephone from the museum, sir.
Okay.
Kenny Williams, he's my son. He wanted to hear before.
Okay, so I'm going to see Mr. Jackson. I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you. After the board, what we're going to do after the board is we're going to go to the supporters that you have here. We do have a victim here. Then we will go to the victim to get in information.
We also have a prosecutor here.
Okay, good so morning. We also okay. Good morning. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Harry.
Good, good. So then we'll go to the prosecutor that we actually have here. To testify on behalf of this case, okay?
Okay.
So does the board have, go ahead, Mr. Quinones.
Yes, I'll try to keep it brief. Mr. Jackson, can you hear me?
Yes.
I just have a question. We have a very long legal document attached from the National Inmate Advocacy Program, dated back in February of 2011. And the question I had as I was reviewing the package, I recognize that you've been in the prison system for quite some time, and certainly as one voting board member, I'm sensitive to the idea of people who are wrongly accused, and have been incarcerated for long periods of time. My question is, did your case ever go to appeal? Because I don't see any documents in here of an appeal.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
I'm sorry, that's not accurate.
It
did go to appeal.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So when you have the opportunity to come up here, so we keep everybody going and everything in order, you'll have Mr. Jackson. Mr. Jackson. So keep everything in order that when you have the opportunity to come up and speak, then you'll be able to address any issues coming from the board or statements that the board's make or any corrections that you may like to deem necessary.
And I'll bring this to a close, Mr. Jackson. I wanted to know that information for a greater understanding of your case, and your attorney will have a chance to elaborate on that further. But that's my only question. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, the board have any additional questions? Okay, so what I'm going to go to now is going to the supporters. What I would like to do is that when you come up as a supporter, please just come up to the mic, state your full name, present any information to the board that you'd like the board to actually have, and then I'm going to let you choose the order that you would like to come up in. And what I'm going to do, since we have so many, I'm going to ask you to try to limit your comments to 2 or 3 minutes. So whoever's first, just come up to the podium, please state your full name, and then
present any information that you'd like to present to the board.
Hello. My name is Mike Williams. I associated with Leroy through marriage. My brother was married to my lovely sister, and I was sitting over there. I happened to know Leroy back in high school. However, he was about 3 years younger than myself. And at that time, you know, he seemed to be a good kid. I don't know about the transgressions and whether they're true or not, but I do know that he comes from a good family, a very good family. A sister was, aunt was a minister, and all of the family went to Reverend Barnwell Church on 19th Avenue and worship. And they're still together, and the family is good. And like I said, I think that if he were allowed to be released, then he has a very strong family structure behind him.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I would just like to go on the record and indicate that I do know Mr. Williams. He and I have never had the opportunity to, Professor Williams, we never had the opportunity to discuss this case. And I'm also familiar with the church that he referred to, and we've not had an opportunity to discuss it with anyone. Therefore, I will not be recusing myself. Thank you, sir.
I also need to say that I know Mr. Williams, but I also belong to First New Life Church, too. I did run into Mr. Williams on my way in here, and he told me he was coming in here for this case. However, we have not had a full opportunity to discuss it. I'll see myself accusing myself and did review this case yesterday and go through that file. But I do want to also put that on the record, too. So.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So who's next?
Good morning. My name is Joelle Hutchison, and I represent Tiger Mountain Foundation. I was just newly elected to the board there. I came to the board of Tiger Mountain Foundation because I have a theological background as well as a special education background. So I have the opportunity to help assist Darren Chapman and the Tiger Mountain Foundation in providing opportunities for folks who were system involved to reacclimate back into society. Tiger Mountain Foundation is an organization based in South Phoenix, which has the largest recidivism rates in the state, some of the largest recidivism rates in the country. We have placed ourselves there to work amongst community. We are an asset community program, which means that we empower community members to take advantage of the things that are placed in their community to make it a livable and workable space for all. Because recidivism and because incarceration, because gang life is so strong in South Phoenix, we have done the best that we can and continue to do to reduce those recidivism rates by employing folks who are system involved. And that is through our gardening. We have 3 community gardens in South Phoenix. We also do landscaping at folks' homes. And all of this is done through a mentorship, not only in the process of how to take care of the environments and how to take care and feed our community, but it is also about the opportunity in which to educate, to provide GED, to provide special education services, to provide financial literacy, and all of that. So that's how I'm here to represent Mr. Leroy Jackson Jr. and his family today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Lucinda Heights Claybaugh. I live at 2704 Fergus Lane in Forest Grove, Oregon. And I come all the way flying from Oregon to this hearing today because I believe that you should be releasing Leroy Jackson Jr. And I believe that because I have read through the entire case file of police reports of the motions for immunity, which suppressed information about prior bad acts of the alleged victim, and all of the other court documents that were involved, including transcripts of the hearings and the appeals information that you were asking about, sir. There was an ACLU amicus brief filed in behalf of Leroy Jackson Jr. back because he had had a public defender who had not helped him adequately. Ineffective assistance of counsel was called. And also, the ACLU filed a statement about the racist comments made by police officers who had attempted to that drug dealer, unquote. Several people heard these statements, and a number of statements were made by the police officers during the hearings and during the court process, which are questionable at best. In addition, the NAACP in 1976, 77, 78, the appeals process also filed an amicus brief on behalf of Leroy Jackson Jr. They too claimed that the judge had made very racist comments, racist remarks, and had been influenced appropriately. And the logic of what came from the decisions in the original 76 court hearing and later in the hearings later in the appeals process were in fact totally inappropriate. In today's court, those things will not fly. Today we also have, through the Innocence Project and the National Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, we have opportunities to use DNA testing and modern technology methods for proving that somebody's sperm or somebody's blood really is that person's or is not that person, and you can then rule them out. And in this case, that would be something that we'd like, we would eventually, I'm sure, like to be able to look at any evidence that still exists. I don't know if any still exists. That is one of the things we have to look at with the Freedom of Information Act and going through getting complete records, complete Freedom of Information Act access to all of the court statements, all of the police reports, all of the anonymity, again, all of the ACLU and NAACP findings, both of those amicus briefs that were in behalf of Mr. Leroy Jackson Jr. Those things what right today in a different political climate, I don't believe that he would have ever been sent to prison. So, I come to you today from far away because I care about wrongful conviction and I care that police have adequate oversight so that when somebody decides they want to cross the line and they do it because they think it's for the best, then that's still crossing the line. And some of those people who were involved may be dead. When I went back to look at the CDs put in the amicus briefs, some of those people involved were dead. They had died, they passed since. Same thing with the NAACP, some of those membership. People who had been involved in that very process of the amicus brief filings were not with us anymore, unfortunately. And we also are sadly missing the Reverend Henry Bishop Barnswell from the First Life Missionary Baptist Church, because he had spoken at Leroy's original trial as a person positively, because Leroy did go to Sunday school as a kid. He was raised going to church every Sunday, and he, I believe, in reading through all of these documents and court statements and files that I have analyzed, Leroy is not a violent person. He has never always been angry, been a violent person that I have seen, or that any of his relatives, and I've talked to approximately 25 people that I've interviewed over the last 3 years. None of those people have ever seen him act in violence. What is angry?
We're going to ask you to wrap up so we can have some of the other.
It also should be known that the Innocence Project affiliate in Arizona is known as the Arizona Justice Project, and they have not taken on Leroy yet as a client. They don't do so until they've investigated anywhere from 6 months to 2 years, really looking at records and see if there is something that we can do to help someone get out as a wrongfully convicted person. But they are investigating his case. They have taken on law students and an attorney, and they are on this case for the investigation stage. They have gotten his intake, and they are looking at his case.
And we have a report and some information from them, so.
Okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can answer as a matter of accuracy for the record.
Yeah, I'll see if the board has any additional questions.
Do you have any other questions? I did go to visit Leroy last year, July, 4 hours. Is a friend of family with one of his younger sister, Michelle. And I asked him, I grilled him very carefully on everything that I possibly could, and I am convinced that he did not commit this crime.
Okay.
After all of the reading of the evidence, and especially reading it and learning the information which was suppressed about the prior acts of the alleged victim, that is not to say that someone did not hurt the world, but I don't believe it was
even.
Okay, thank you.
With all my heart. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Johnson, we do take note that there were persons present from the Arizona Justice Project in the room at this time. We're not saying that they will participate, but they are in the room, since you mentioned them.
Okay.
My name is Steve Jackson. I'm DUI. I'm approximately 6 years old and we grew up together. Because I'm an Adam Martin, you've always been a gentle person. I've never known you to do anything that violent or against anyone. I can't really say that he didn't do it, but I don't believe that he did. Now, I don't know what else I can say other than I believe in Leroy. Leroy is a good person, and I hope that you get him up.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do you have any questions? Anyone else, supporters, wanting to speak? Are there any other supporters that would like to speak?
I'm on the phone. I'm Mrs. Howard.
Mrs. Howard, we're going to get to you after we have all the supporters who are actually here present to speak, and then we'll be going to the telephone, okay?
Good morning. That's my sister.
Okay.
I'm Ethel Williams. I'm the aunt of Leroy Jackson Jr. Leroy, to me, I remember him. I was freshly married when all this took place. But Leroy was always the one that I looked up to as being a role model for our kids. As far as neatness and everything in order, I mean, I never saw him without clean hands, clean clothes, ever. He was always neat and orderly. I don't think he would do anything to hurt anybody. And I know he would never, ever do anything. I don't believe he did. But the court has been incarcerated for, I think he would put up. It would be a detriment to society not to release him, because he is a family member of ours. And we're a family that believes in togetherness. We love each other. We support each other. We do the same for him, like we always have. And I say, please, please, let him out so that he can see the outside again, so that we can know what he's like, so that we can experience what our young men are all about. This taking him and keeping him in prison for 41 years, that's long enough. I think he knows the consequences of anything that they say he has done. I don't believe he did any of it, but I think that if you release him, you will see that he will be a very good member of society, then you will always think is family, and that's what we're all about, family. We're from a large family. We've always been together, and we believe in each other and care and love each other, and we know the Lord God is right here in the middle of all this. I know that Lucinda would never have come into my life if it hadn't been for God.
Amen.
Just happened to meet her on the bus coming from a family dinner in Washington down to Oregon. And I know it was God that intervened when I talked to her. So I say, let's do this. Get him out of here. And we will help him to get on the right road to wherever he has to go, to recovery. And that's what he needs.
Thank you.
There is a letter that Darren Chapman sent me to read from the...
You cannot talk from back there. You have to come forward to the mic.
But just a minute. Because what I want to do is make sure I give everyone the opportunity to come up here and actually speak. I do want to inform you that if you present a letter to us, that letter will be part of the evidence and that we have to keep that here as court records, okay? So, is there anyone else that's wanting to come up as a supporter and speak?
We speak with Justin.
So of the original group, oh, okay.
Good morning. My name is Margaret Walters. I'm Leroy's aunt as well. My oldest son was a baby when Leroy went into prison. And I remember I took a picture of him, my baby, in the crib, and Leroy standing next to him. And my prayer at that time was, Lord, let my baby grow up and be like his uncle. Because to me, in my eyes, he was an outstanding young man. I looked up to him, and I thought he was a gentleman at that time. And has always been my opinion of him. I want you to know that we as a family love Leroy very much. We have continued over these 40-some years to pray for him. Has been too long to be in prison. If he did something, whatever it was, I don't know. I do not believe that. But I know that women do get hurt. I know that men get hurt. And I think that there comes a time in life that we all need to be free. And I'm asking for this time for we call him Chi-Chi. I can't get over that name, but he is Leroy. But I think it's time that he be released, and I'm asking for an honorable release for my nephew to be able to come out and be reunited, not just with his family, not just with the community, but with life in general, with the church, with the environment, so that he can reestablish who he is and that God can reestablish how he put him on this earth and that he can submit to people that will be over him to help get him back into society. Thank you
very much. Okay, thank you. My name is Evelyn Mitchell. I'm Leroy's aunt also. His mom and I were very, very close. And the last parole hearing, we were here together, and my sister could barely breathe, and she said, oh, please let my son out. He'd been in 38 years at that time, now it's 41. So she passed 2 years ago, a few months after we were here. Please let my nephew out so he can experience life.
Is there anyone else here that we originally called out that would like to speak? I see there's some other. Are you coming up to speak? Okay. So as she's coming up, are you here for Mr. Jackson too? No? Okay, thank you.
There's eight girls in our family.
Good morning. For the Lord. I am Rita Walters, Leroy Jr.'s, Jackson Jr.'s maternal aunt. And I'm from his mother's family of 16 children.
Okay, can I just stop you? Ms. Howard?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, Mr. Jackson? Mr. Leroy? Mr. Jackson?
Yes.
Could you just take the phone down a little bit from your mouth because we can hear you breathing this.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
I'm from his mother's family of 16 children, and we all love Leroy. Many of us are gone, but there are a few of us left. And I've watched Leroy time and again be refused for parole, along with his mother and his family. I know that Leroy is a wonderful young man. He's an old man now, getting older. And I call him a young man because I'm older than he is. I would like to see him paroled. He served 40 years plus, and he is prepared, I think, to begin his move outside of the prison into society. There are a lot of things that he's going to have to be a part of and learn. And we've got people backing us today who are willing to give him the training that he needs, the job, the living quarters. We're here, they're here to assist us. Leroy, I visited many times while he was in the Florence prison with my mom and his mom, and he was always happy to see us coming, and he interrelated with us, and he always said, please pray for me when we were leaving. And we never forgot to pray for him. And we're still here for him. As time went on, his sisters grew of age, and we had to come off of his visitor's list. They got on it. But we still maintain contact through then. He married later on to some lady, I've never met her. And again, the visitor's list kept us off of it. But I'm going to get back on the visitor's list to get my nephew back into society, to reinvest him into what life is all about on the outside. He needs to be with family, and we're requesting parole for this young man. I know he's done some things. He's not perfect, but I know that he can be a better citizen when he's released because of the time he spent in prison. He's a better man for it, and I want to thank the parole board for giving me the opportunity to come up and share these tidbits. I'm wondering if you got the fax from my sister Dorothy, my 86-year-old sister.
We have several letters.
Did you get that?
Yes.
Okay. There is a lot of involvement from the entire family, from most of the family, should I say. But we're requesting that you honor all of those. And I'll speak again.
Thank you. Board, any questions? So are there any other supporters that's wishing to speak? Any other supporters? Ms., I'm going to give you the opportunity to come up and you want to present the board actually with a letter.
May I approach, please?
Yes, if you just present all the board members with the letter, they will have the opportunity to look at it. So it wouldn't be necessary for you to read it out verbally. Okay, thank you.
This is the caring community that has made a commitment to help you write.
Okay, thank you.
So
is there any other supporters? If there be no other supporters, then I'm going to ask. Ms. Howard?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, if you could go ahead at this time, just state your full name and then present the information to the board.
Yes, my name is Claudine Estelle Howard, and I would want to speak with the board regarding LeRoy. I did send him a letter. LeRoy has been in communication with me off and on for many, many years, and he's been there a while. And I really believe with all my heart that when a person is locked up in 1976 and he confesses to this day that he didn't commit a crime, I don't think that it's beyond life that could not be possible. There's been many things, you know, that's happened here in Arizona, and what I would like to acknowledge is that LeRoy, when he was very young, he ran his father's janitor service. He's very capable of coming out of there, doing what he needs to do in life, working at whatever job he is handed, with sincerity. He's always said, I need to be out of there. The things have passed him by, but he still has a good handle on life and what he needs to do here. I can't say too much for what the board says today or any other time, but I can say that he was incarcerated all those many, many years. All the records and the police evidence that's missing and all of that kind of stuff. You know what? This is real life. And he has had not much of a chance to live it, but he has survived all of his time in a prison. And I think that if he were released today, tomorrow, or the day after tomorrow, he would still be a valuable citizen to this state, to his family, and to his country. Time tells everything. So far, it's told a lot. But just to keep a person incarcerated, you know, that's the end of his life. He would like to live on in liberty and not incarcerated. I would like to see him on the outside of the prison. Our entire family would. We love LeRoy. That will never stop. We stick together. And he has so much in common with all of us. He just was handed a raw deal. And like a lot of us were handed a raw deal, prison was the worst deal that anybody could get other than death. So my speaking for my nephew, I'm in another state. I've been back and forth to Arizona many, many times. My family's there. And I would love to see Leroy be able to maintain the responsibility of trying to get his family life back together. He's got children, graduated from the university. He's got a family who really loves him, and he's a loving person all this time. He's remaining that person. So I'd like to see him released. And there are many, many areas that he can go into counseling. I've researched many, many homes and many, many houses, the Dimension, Maverick House, House of Miracles, Shelter Services. He can make it, given the opportunity. He can make it here. He can make it there. He can make it if somebody were to release him. He would still be that much of a person to be able to fit into the society and give back what was taken from him. And that is all I would have to say. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. Does the board have any questions? Okay, Ms. Howard. Thank you. You can remain on the line, Ms. Howard, at this time.
All right.
There'll be no more supporters. We're going to, do you guys want the prosecutor to speak first, or would you like the Ms. Fana to speak first?
Ms. Mallon has indicated she'd like to go first.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Mallon.
Excuse me. Good morning. My name is Lisa Mallon. I'm 64 years young. I have two amazing, productive, grown sons, and I have a full and very gratifying life in Evergreen, Colorado. This is my third time before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I attended two hearings in 2015, one in March, one in November, none in 2016, since inmate Jackson chose not to attend, and here we are in 2017. I decided it was imperative for me to attend the hearing today due to the fact that four out of the five of you on the board are new members. I do remember speaking in front of Chairman Wright both times in 2015. I would prefer to not be here today speaking to you all. The monetary expense, the time away from my life at home, and the emotional toll involved in appearing before this committee is considerable. I was hoping I would never have to attend these hearings. When I was notified of the first hearing in 2015, I had one question of the victim services team. Does inmate Jackson take responsibility for his actions in 1976? I was hoping he was going to take responsibility. At that point, he'd been in prison for 39 years, a very long time. I wanted to hear that he'd become a star prisoner, one who took advantage of all the years to improve himself, one who worked hard to be reformed and make all those years count for something more than being warehoused. Then I found out the real story, and I realized I was dreaming or thinking of a movie or something else. And again today, 2 years later, we only hear excuses from inmate Jackson. I'm sure your records before you indicate, I heard you discuss it, sometime in 14, inmate Jackson made threatening comments to a teacher in prison. He clearly still had a problem with authority and power. This brings up the question, has inmate Jackson learned anything in these 39 to 41 years? The answer is no. Did he take advantage of any sex offender therapy? No, because he still refuses to admit that he's guilty. Allow me to fill you in I want to remind everyone here that there is no question about his guilt. His fingerprint was found on a lamp in my apartment. He was found guilty of rape, grand theft, and aggravated battery in 1976. Allow me to fill you in on why his charges and sentencing were so severe. Here's a guy who at the time was 22 years old, same as me. Our first meeting was he grabbed and stole my purse while walking behind me on the grounds of my apartment on a dark night. Luckily, I had my keys in my hand and honestly, I didn't think too much of it. Lots of purses get stolen, and again, we're talking about 1976. Almost 3 months later, while he's on top of me, raping me, he tells me that he is the guy who stole my purse, and that he'd been watching me ever since. I repeat, he told me he'd been watching me for almost 3 months. He beat me, he gagged me, he beat me again. He bit me, he beat me again. He raped me, he beat me again. He hog-tied me with two lamp cords. His fingerprint was taken from one of those lamps. He beat me again. He stole everything of any value that I owned, making multiple trips to his car until my apartment was practically empty. Each time he'd come back into the apartment, he beat me again. He was in my apartment for over 2 hours. A couple days later, I was called to the police department, and I clearly identified him with no doubt in my mind. Judge Heineman gave inmate Jackson a stiff sentence for a reason. He and many other people worked very hard to do the right thing in this case. They went above and beyond to make sure this person stayed off the streets. He was sentenced to a total of 65 to 115 years. I can never thank them all enough. I want to quote a part of a letter that Cindy Nannetti wrote in 1995 when a disproportionality hearing was conducted. At that time, Cindy was chief of the Sex Crimes Bureau at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. She said, and I quote, "Mr. Jackson's sadistic, sexual, and physical offending behavior show his problems are much greater than deviant arousal and social skill deficiencies. He is a predator who inflicts immeasurable terror on his victims." She also said, despite overwhelming evidence that he assaulted Ms. M., he denies his culpability. Mr. Jackson was not an appropriate candidate for community treatment when he was sentenced to prison, and I strongly oppose his request to be granted this privilege today. I say, nothing has changed since that letter was written. I was brutally attacked in the middle of the night by a complete stranger who was looking to control, terrorize, destroy a woman. He didn't care who his victim was. I know there were other women. I was told they were too afraid to testify against him. Over the years, I've dealt with the fear, anxiety, and anger that inmate Jackson created in my life. I've worked very hard to make a good life for myself, and it does take work. That effort and the support of my family and friends taught me to trust and love again. I know what love is, I know how to feel love, and I know how to give love. And there's nothing more important than that. I didn't want today's statement to be about the specifics of my experience in 1976. However, the details of that experience have never left me. I also wanted the focus of this hearing to be about inmate Jackson's inability to take responsibility for now 41 long years. I have no doubt he comes from a good family. I have no doubt that they all feel strongly that he's innocent. But this is not a case of a wrongful conviction. This happened to me. I can only speak about my experience. His fingerprint, again, was found on a lamp in my apartment. He used that lamp cord to tie me up. His sister showed up in the preliminary hearing wearing my clothing. There's no question whether this guy is guilty. Time only heals? Yes. but only if one's being honest. So, I asked you all today to think about the life you've lived over the last 41 years. It takes a lot of work to create and sustain a productive life. Marriages, kids, vacations, jobs, illnesses, volunteer work. I could go on and on. We have all enjoyed the freedom to make choices about our lives. I know I've made some good choices, some bad choices, and some really ugly ones too. But I know I made every one of those choices. Being part of a civilized society means we work hard and we take responsibility for the choices we've made and the life we've lived. If we don't take responsibility for our actions, we should not enjoy any of the freedoms. Thank you.
Let's blow down the questions. Okay, thank you, Ms.
Thank you. Good morning. Let me introduce myself. Mr. Wright and I have met a couple of years ago, but the rest of you have not met me in person. My name is Sarah McFlicker. I'll spell that for you, M-I-C-F-L-I-K-I-E-R. You oftentimes probably see my name because I'm Assistant Bureau Chief of the Sex Crimes Bureau at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and I often write letters on behalf of my office related to clemency hearings. I've written a letter in this case, as well as many other cases over the years. This case is different. As Mr. Wright may recall, I was here a couple of years ago and spoke on behalf of my office and our objection to the release of this inmate. Nothing has changed in our position. Frankly, nothing has changed in Mr. Jackson's life, it appears. He denied his culpability at that point. He continues to deny it today. It's my understanding that one of the things this board would review is acceptance of responsibility. That simply has not happened here. And just like the victim in this case, really the survivor in this case, Ms. Mallon has indicated, with all due respect to his family, and they certainly are free to believe what they believe, the evidence in this case was significant. And I don't know if Mr. Wright, you recall, or if this board is aware, the last time we were here that we spoke, when Ms. Mallon spoke, there was a member of the board that asked Ms. Mallon to look at Mr. Jackson, to look at him very carefully, and said, is that the person that really raped you back all of those years ago? And she, with conviction and without any kind of question in her mind, said 100% that is the man that did it. She was very clear, and she continues to be very clear today. It is my office's position that the explanation of this inmate that he is a nonviolent person can absolutely be contradicted by, obviously, the behavior in this case, obviously by the behavior that this board knows was also alleged, and I use the alleged in those matters because they were not convictions at trial of other women who have indicated they may have been raped by Mr. Jackson. With Ms. Mallon, it is not an allegation. It is a conviction. It happened. But he also continues to engage in similar behavior while in custody. It was only just as recent as 2014 that he had a threatening and intimidating charge while in the Department of Corrections. The comments from members of his family or from representatives who are here in support of inmate Jackson may not understand or just may not disagree with the way the law works, but back in the 1970s, we didn't necessarily have rape shield laws. And there was some discussion of prior bad acts of the victim. Laws have come a long way for a reason. We have rape shield laws in place for a reason. Ms. Mallon's history, whatever it may or may not have been, has nothing to do with what happened in this case. And what happened in this case is that this inmate was predatory, following her, watching her, and coming back for her. He was violent in his actions with her, and frankly, callous after the fact. Her items were provided to family members of his. So it is my office's position that this inmate should not be granted any release at this time. It should not be granted any release anytime soon. He has not accepted responsibility. He is not an appropriate candidate for release at this time. Thank you very much.
Okay, so go ahead and have any questions.
Yes, just to follow up, I asked this question earlier, and it sounded like appeal was made reference to something like way in the distant past. Was there an appeal in this case?
That's a great question, and I wish I had the answer for you. I was trying to look it up in my system here. This is such an old case that I can't find it in our records. So I don't want to give you incorrect information. I do not know the answer to that, whether there was an appeal or not. I wish I could give you that information, but I don't have it.
Thank you.
Has there been any reviews of the forensic evidence in this case?
Not that I'm aware of since the time of the conviction. Not that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah, without seeing the list of things that were entered into evidence, it's hard to say, but in 1976, there was very limited forensic ability. And I know in Glendale, we solved several cold cases. We didn't get anybody out of prison, but we put a lot of people in based on newer technology.
Right. Yep, and the technology has certainly come a long way since the 1970s, obviously. DNA was just not as advanced analytically as it is now. But I will tell you, even to this day, our office prosecutes cases without DNA evidence, without fingerprint evidence. When we have a one-on-one identification of the person who lived what happened, just like we have in this case, we happen to have an additional bonus piece of evidence, which is that fingerprint, and by the way, also the fact that there were belongings that were of Ms. Mallon's that were then found with the defendant, excuse me, with this inmate's family members. But she very clearly indicated he is the individual who did this, and to this day, we will pursue and prosecute and get convictions in cases in which there is a witness, a victim who says, he is the person or she is the person that committed this crime against me, and we uphold convictions like that every day.
I have just one question, because I did read in the report that it said that the clothing was distributed to family members. So what was the determination? I did hear Ms. Mona say somebody appeared in court with some of her clothing. So can you explain?
That is my understanding. I don't have any further information on that. I hope that I just don't. I wasn't around at the time when this occurred. I've been in Sex Crimes Bureau around 10 years now, and this obviously happened quite a bit before then, so I wasn't a part of the original case. The prosecutors that were a part of the original case are no longer in the office. But what I can tell you is Ms. Mallon very clearly has indicated that a family member showed up to a court hearing in one of her items of clothing.
Okay. I have just one other question. I know that you, and this happened back in 1976, but is it a common practice now to receive 100 years for a sexual offense?
The sentencing laws have changed. And so it depends on what the offense is, what the acts are, how many charges there are. It really just depends. It depends on the prior criminal history of a defendant at the time nowadays. There are a lot of factors that go into place in sentencing. We have had individuals who are accused of sexual offenses who go away for hundreds upon hundreds of years. It really depends on the specific charge, their criminal history, and how many counts they have, because in cases like this, counts are mandatory consecutive. And so each count, for example, of sexual assault is mandatory consecutive prison time, one on top of the other. So we have individuals who have 10 counts of sexual assault within one incident, and they go away for a very long time.
I do understand that, but this appears to be a 100-year sentence for one count.
Well, but not necessarily one act. This is one incident, but there are different acts that happen within one incident.
Right.
When you have, that's, and excuse me for my...
I understand that there's multiple... acts. Usually we see those multiple acts and you see multiple charges, 20, 30, 40, to be served consecutively, and those times could just add up. But my short period of time on here is the first time I've seen one sentence for 100 years.
Right, and the sentencing laws have changed on that. So if it was today, and if this inmate had no criminal history, and if this inmate only committed one act of sexual assault, and I say one act when I mean one act of penile vaginal intercourse, or one act of oral sexual conduct, or something of that nature, then it would not be this type of sentence that is correct. However, if there was an act of penile vaginal intercourse, and to be candid, if he removed his penis and then put his penis back in, that's a second act.
Right.
Removed his penis and put it back in, that's another act. All of those would be stacked in consecutive sentences.
Right. I've seen the consecutive. I was just asking about the one sentence of 100 years. On one sentence, I've seen the consecutive sentence where a person could have lined over 200 years, mm-hmm. but it's a matter of consecutive sentence for all the counts that they actually have.
Yes,
okay. Is there any more questions by the board? Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Mr. Jackson, we're going to come back to you. You've heard all the testimony. You've heard everyone speak here today. The board's going to go into discussion shortly to make a decision whether to grant you parole or deny you parole. But, sir, I want to give you the opportunity to make any last-minute statements that you would like to present to this board. So taking into consideration that you have heard all of the people here testifying, including the victim, along with the representative from the county attorney's office, sir.
Yes. I would like to speak. This is the third time that I heard this young lady in the background say that I raped her. I don't even know, and I'm gonna always say it, even though people gonna look at it and think of it a different way. I did not rape that lady. I don't even know who that lady is. I didn't do anything. I'm not trying to run no con game. Sure, I've been in here 41 years. For 41 years, I have always said the same thing. It wasn't me. Sure, she said they had fingerprints on a lamp. It wasn't no lamp and no corduroy with no fingerprints. The only thing they had in there was my coat. That the blood they took out of my body all showing with blood all over it. I did not rape that young lady. I don't even know who she is. I can't even read and write. I'm going to steal your purse and then come find your house. I have had a problem with reading and writing all my life. Lady, I am sorry for whatever happened to you. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. And you keep on saying that I'm not remorsed. Like I said, I did 41 years. I did not rape you. I am sorry whatever happened to you. It wasn't me. I was in a line with street clothes on. Those people, whatever they told you to push me into this prison, I don't even know. But I was the one in the line with nothing but street clothes. Everybody else had on prison clothes, white t-shirts. I stood out like a lollipop. I did not rape you. I am sorry what happened to you, but it wasn't me. I'm not being no con game anything.
So we're going to address the board when you address the board, sir. But if you finish, I do have one question for you about a statement that you just made in there. And you said that the only items that was found was your coat with blood on it.
Yes.
And where was that found at?
They took that off me when I turned myself to the police station.
Okay. All right.
When I found out I went to the police station, they took my coat, they took blood out of my body, they put me in a lineup. Next time I seen my coat was in the corridor with blood all over it.
Okay.
Like I wore to the police station.
All right, sir. The board have any additional questions for Mr. Jackson? Okay, Mr. Jackson,
The board is going to go into discussion. So while the board is in discussion, we're going to ask you to remain silent. While the board is in discussion, we ask you to remain silent. The board will make a decision whether to parole you or to deny your parole or absolute discharge. So stay on the line, sir, but remain silent. We'll get back to you. The board is now going into discussion. You know, I read this case yesterday, and then I came back in this morning because the 100-year sentence ain't kind of got to me, so I was going back through this report this morning, which made me a little bit later. Walking back in here this morning, I also went back over and reviewed the information from the actual Justice Department, which talked about they reviewed the investigation, and from the information that they received, it was clear that he was afforded adequate, I'm assuming, would have had the opportunity to appeal to higher courts. But in all the documentation that I read nothing in the research that gave any indication or allegation that he was innocent, other than they talked about misrepresentation, they talked about hearsay, they talked about all of the different court processes and procedures, but there was nothing in conclusion of that document that went toward any allegations of innocence. As a matter of fact, in the last sentence, it really just states, I do believe we have suffered long enough, and I do pray that you use this information collected to help you further your quest for freedom. It also states, I know there's that they have contacted several attorneys from the state, and they were waiting for a response from at least six of them to see if they could look up his case as well. And that was their last comment after the many conclusions that we actually got. And I am concerned, 100-year sentence is an extremely long time. I know these were some violent crimes that were actually committed. And we also have responsibility to make sure that if someone is released, that at least I don't want to feel as though that they've been rehabilitated or there's some effort on their behalf to rehabilitate themselves, so that there's a conflict for the community that this type of crime will not be committed. I know that this is an extremely long time, 41 years to have been incarcerated already in prison, but I'm having a little bit of a problem with looking at all the information that we have to understand that if he had a jacket that had the blood on it, I don't know if they found the victim's blood on that jacket or not, because certainly we weren't in it. But according to the information that we have, it was fingerprint that was found on the lamp that was used to tie the victim. And there was a positive ID, not just by this victim, but by two other victims that had allegedly been involved in this type of incident before. I'm kind of stuck on this. 41 years has been a long time, 100-year sentence. That does bother me, but I got some issues with Mr. Jackson, if he wasn't involved, you know, to say that he wasn't involved, but I have some issues with all the information that we have so far in 41 years. There's been no real information that's been presented, at least that I see, according to the court records and documentation that we have, to say that he was innocent or mistrial. There was some information that only talks about that he may have had inadequate representation at the time. However, 41 years to be incarcerated is a long time, and he does have a lot of family support that are willing to assist and help him, and I think that they would be there, but I'm just having some problems with the total denial of any involvement of this process that's there, and the lack of all of the information that we received to point to anything that says that he's innocent other than being guilty in that 41 years. But I'm willing to listen to the rest of the board. Mr. Greenhouse.
Sir, I'm feeling similarly to you, and I know that one of our some of the testimony that we received was that there are efforts underway to look at this, you know, in more detail. And, you know, if that does come true and prove something, then we'll have the opportunity to revisit this at some point. But I'm with you. I would prefer to wait and hear the results of that action before we would take this step.
Thank you. Yes, I just want to follow up, and I do recognize, I don't want to open this up any further. We have an advocate stating that there was an appeal somewhere in the process, but it's certainly not something that's being provided to us, and I kind of hear everything that's being said right now, that it's been a long time in the prison system, you know, whether sentencing has changed in the interim, evidence, etc. But right now, I don't see anything saying that he's not, I know we're not here to retry a case, but I have to look as one individual voting member at this case on face value, and all indications are is that he was guilty of this crime, and we don't have an individual who's admitting to doing it. So it would seem that there's a piece missing here from the criminal justice system, which I know is outside of this board, which is retrial, appeal, more information, whatever it is in the criminal justice system. At this point, all I can say is that all I can see is what's in front of me, which is a guilty verdict and an individual who's not admitting to the crime. And that's where I'll continue the discussion.
I agree with that.
I also want to say part of the reason why I'm torn is 41 years is a long time. If it was a person became eligible for parole, and whether they admitted to being guilty or not admitted to being guilty, if they became eligible, they became eligible. There's nothing you can do to change it whether a person does that. But the concern is in this particular case, you know, it's the 41 years long enough sentence for the crime that was actually committed. You know, it was a horrible crime that was committed. The victim was Harvey Tedlar, and the victim herself even testified that, you know, she had hoped that there would be some forgiveness. I think she made the statement, but only if one is being honest for forgiveness, and that, you know, she was looking forward to having some honesty and seeing that there's some effort on behalf of the of Mr. Jackson to rehabilitate himself so that doesn't happen. And it was a disappointment to her then, and so those are the issues that I'm concerned with and looking at concerning this incident. Dr. Ryan.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Jackson. I, as you know, that this is my third hearing from Mr. Jackson, as well as from the victim. And I think that, you know, one of the things that concerned me, we cannot retry this. We are not going to attempt to retry it. That's not our job. That's definitely not our responsibility. That's not part of our mandate, is to retry. But I think that what you mentioned last is sticking in my mind, Mr. Johnson, and that is rehabilitation. Has he been rehabilitated? A couple of things along those lines that do concern me was the incident in 2014. Whatever happened there, but that was a write-up, that was a ticket, and it was a major ticket that was presented at that time. The other one concerns me, although I can understand why Mr. Jackson feels that it's not necessary, but inasmuch as he has been charged, I'm not saying that he was guilty. I'm not going to go that far because I have no idea whether he was guilty or not guilty. But he has not, for whatever reason, participated in any sexual counseling courses, programs that's offered by DOC. And I think that that's something that's very important for us, for me as one board member, therefore, I guess I said that is to say that I do sympathize with the family. I sympathize with the church. Also, of course, I sympathize with the victim. But I must agree with other colleagues that this time we do not. I'm not prepared to recommend parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. Thank you, sir.
This has been kind of a difficult case. I do understand that's an enormous amount of family support to actually support Mr. Jackson. There are some questions that we have. I am in listening to Mr. Jackson and also looking at his Angel report into, over the years of what's been going on, as well as on this board, we've seen many times that people have gone all the way and all the way to, you know, tell the family that they weren't involved, and they weren't involved. But we, like I said, I wasn't there, so I wasn't involved in this, and I don't really know. But Dr. Wright, I'm in agreement with you about the efforts on Mr. Jackson. I spoke to him a little bit earlier about the rehabilitation, in which he said he's been transferred to several yards, but like his last class that he actually took was, it was 2014, he was in a class in which that's the last he said that he got in trouble, and there were some statements made, but he was found guilty. But he said the teacher threatened him, but the teacher accused him of something that he didn't do. Someone made a statement, and he said that it wasn't him, but someone else did it, and the teacher accused him of doing it. However, according to the documentation, he was found guilty of that, but that was in 2014, and prior to that, the last class that he had taken was in 2009, and the sex offender class was, looks like he may have enrolled in the sex offender class, because it has a beginning date of 11/5, November 5th, 2008, and an end date of November 5th, 2008. So it appears that he didn't really take that class. And he has to show some effort on his behalf to show that he's making an effort to rehabilitate himself. It does not mean that he's committed the crime or that he's guilty, but he's taking some effort to rehabilitate himself while he's been incarcerated in prison. There are some efforts, according to the documentation that we have, to make some efforts to relook at his sentencing structure. So I am going to, Dr. Wright, at this time, I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. Jackson at this time absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest. I am going to state the reasons for doing that is that it was a serious and violent offense, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim. But I also added in multiple victims. I'm going to mark lack of programming did. I'm going to mark lack of program that he actually has had while he's been incarcerated. I'm not going to mark poor or no release plan. Now, he does have a release plan. He does have family here to support him. He does have family members as well as community members here to support him. Those are going to be my my reasons for it. At this time, if the board has any additional. So that will be my motion.
Agree.
Okay, Mr. Jackson? Sir?
Yes.
So the board has voted to deny your release at this time to parole for absolute discharge for regular parole or home arrest. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir. Mr. Jackson, let me thank you for participating in your hearing today. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time. Okay, Mr. Jackson, your family could hear you. They're acknowledging, they could hear what you said, sir. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time. Could you put the CO3 back on the phone, sir?
Okay.